and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q1 and FY 2024 earnings conference call of E2E Networks Limited, hosted by Verulam Advisors. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touchtone phone. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Purvangi Jain from Valorem Advisors. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Good morning, everyone, and a warm welcome to you all. My name is Purvangi Jain from Valorem Advisors. We represent the investor relations of E2E Networks Limited. On behalf of the company, I would like to thank you all for participating in the company's earnings call for the first quarter of the financial year 2025. Before we begin, a quick cautionary statement. Some of the statements made in today's con call may be forward-looking in nature. Such forward-looking statements are subject to risk and uncertainties, which could cause actual results to differ from those anticipated. Such statements are based on management's beliefs as well as assumptions made by and information currently available to the management. Audiences are cautioned not to place any undue reliance on these forward-looking statements in making any investment decisions. The purpose of today's earnings conference call is purely to educate and bring awareness about the company's fundamental business and financial quarter under review. Now I would like to introduce you to the management participating with us in today's earnings call and hand it over to them for their opening remarks. We have with us Mr. Tarun Dua, Chairman and Managing Director, and Ms. Megha Raheja, Chief Financial Officer. I now request Mr. Tarun Dua to start with his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Purvangi, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I would like to welcome all of you to the E2E Networks Q1 earnings call for the financial year ending March 25. Let me briefly reintroduce E2E Networks and talk about the business of cloud GPU, especially for the first-time listeners who might be new to the company. So E2E Networks was founded in 2009 and is amongst one of the largest Indian players in the cloud GPU market, which is based out of India. From our origins, we have championed contractless computing in India since 2009, and we count a lot of current unicorns amongst our customers in their journey from startup stage to unicorn stage. Our infrastructure as a service platform supports a large variety of compute workloads for developers, SMEs, startups, enterprises, higher education and research. And very recently, we have also been empaneled by MIT, signifying the suitability of our cloud platform for use by the government for their compute workloads as well. Our cloud platform supports a lot of cloud-native services, including CPU and GPU-based environments running on top of virtual machines or containers, or sometimes in serverless mode. So we have a number of very flexible, high-performance storage solutions, including object storage, block storage, parallel file systems, container-attached storage, ability to elastic file system. We also support network-based and advanced load balancing, virtual firewalls, NAT devices, queuing services, database as a service for a number of databases, including MariaDB, which is open source, and PostgreSQL, and vector databases. We have continued to build our AI/ML platform called TEAR, which is targeted at data scientists and AI/ML developers for AI/ML workloads, which includes training, inference, model endpoint deployment, building an agentic framework, building RAG pipelines, and hopefully many more things to come in the future. So our entire platform is accessible online via myaccount.e2enetworks.com, via API services, via as a Terraform provider in the form of like command line tools that can be used by the developers and DevOps and data scientists to run any kind of workloads, very similar to the way workloads run on any of the major hyperscalers today. So as of today, like majority of the workloads that we service now belong in the AI ML domain and majorly work on the cloud GPU infrastructure that like we have built since 2018-19 onwards. Globally, cloud GPU has become like one of the most transformational technology opportunities for the coming next decade. And the value creation, which is envisaged by running AI/ML workloads on top of cloud GPU, seems to be like at a global level being measured in like trillions of dollars. Now, as an early mover into AI/ML cloud GPU, and having built our own cloud platform from the scratch, like we see a very substantial opportunity in front of E2E Network. And we are very focused on delivering like excellent value for money for our customers while delivering the latest generation of cloud features that our customers have come to expect from cloud platforms, which includes like basically the ability to run like some 25 different microservices and a lot of like backend delivery of services which gets wrapped around in terms of like being able to deliver these services with security and compliance features. In the past 1 year or so, like there has been a talk of like very substantial timeline lasting over a few months to more than a year for the delivery of hardware. Now, what we see today is that like the worst of the scarcity is now behind us. So we should be able to kind of like plan our hardware runs for much shorter periods now compared to what we did in the past, like when there was a lot of scarcity. So we continue to build our cloud platform features using a very strong software engineering team. And we hope to kind of like continue to remain the first choice for India and like many other countries, hopefully outside India, for their cloud GPU workloads. And we kind of like continue building our platform based on the feedback on like, okay, what are the new features required? What are the gaps in the current features? And this productization where like we continue to learn and continue to incorporate the features and bug fixes is what generates the long-term value and differentiation for us as people get more and more used to our platform and they have come to expect like reliability, performance, and the kind of features that helps them kind of like do the activities they are trying to do, run the workloads they are trying to run far more easily on our platform compared to other platforms. So that derives like long-term value for us. Now, we continue talking about like GPU-driven computing. Now, how exactly is it different from, say, CPU-driven computing? So in the CPU world, like what we see today is that like at a very reasonable price point, like the number of physical CPU cores which are delivered within a single server are of the order of like about say 144 or let's say round it off to let's say 150. And typically you put like two physical CPU dies inside like one server. So which means that we are talking about like something like 300 cores. Now, compared to that, like a typical GPU server, it costs 10x, occupies maybe about 2x the amount of space, consumes about 10x the amount of power, and depending on the kind of workload. So we'll talk about the kind of workloads that GPUs primarily focus on, which are majorly highly parallel workloads compared to CPU, which is working on more rule-driven workloads. A GPU is typically able to deliver like, so GPU has like 17,000 into 8 cores in a single box, the CUDA cores. or the EPU core. So that's like massively different from like about 300 odd cores that like a typical CPU driven server would have. And this GPU server also contains the CPU. So essentially a single server for massively parallel workloads driven by the state of the art and the AI ML techniques, majorly powered by open source, is able to deliver like anywhere close to like 1000x the kind of compute that like a typical CPU driven server is able to deliver. So which also means that like if you were to use the same number of cores or similar number of cores, the same order of the number of cores to try and run those massively parallel workloads which are coming from the AI ML domain onto CPU driven systems, you would have to actually do a lot of interconnect in terms of networking. You will need to set up like a large number of servers, occupy a lot of space. So essentially what you're looking at is that like your data center cost when running CPU alone kind of systems goes up massively compared to running by very high density GPU compute. Now this is the trend that we also see in our own numbers, where we have seen that like from doing low density CPU driven compute to high density CPU and then very high density compute on GPUs, like our operational expenditures like as a proportion to our revenue continue to come down. Now, so where exactly are the GPUs used? So like typically the data that was kind of like stored within normalizations within systems was primarily driven by rule-based systems, where essentially like what was really needed for those rules to work shaped the nature of the data. So essentially what you had typically in any enterprise was that you would have relational data in the form of like a table. Typically a single table would have like say 500 columns, and then there would be entity relationships between this table and other tables, and the other tables would also have their own 500 columns, and then millions of rows or billions of rows of services. And then typically what would happen in a typical enterprise would be that these 500 tables interconnected to each other, each with 500 columns or maybe at least 100 of columns, then each of the columns denotes like very specific amount of data, which could be typically be denoted by just a true false, maybe just a bunch of numbers up to 10, and denotes like a flag, denotes like a very small piece of information, all connected together would constitute like a data diagram for like an enterprise software team, which would actually print it out on very large printers, cover up their wall of their dev center, and typically like people would be like looking at that and writing like a lot of software, rule driven software, to kind of like manipulate data going into this very complicated database driven system to follow a certain set of rules that have evolved over like organizations which have worked for like decades altogether. So the complexity would keep on adding up. You would keep adding exceptions. You would keep adding like a lot of rules to the system. And the CPUs were really up to the task of kind of like working in this environment and delivering like a lot of outcomes. Now, all said and done, like with these rule-driven systems, like essentially the organizations were really doing kind of like great job of like automation. But on the other hand, like if you look at like most of organizations' capabilities still belonged in the people, who would have their own set of mental rules which could not really be translated into like computer-driven rules. So which is why we said that, okay, there is a computer exception that needs to be handled, then you need a human in the loop. So human in the loop was doing 95% of the work, automation was doing probably only 5% of the work, and the organizations were working like reasonably okay. Now with GPU and AI ML techniques becoming like very, very modern, so what has happened is that like we have reached an inflection point of the amount of compute available for doing massively parallel operations, which can process a lot of probabilities in terms of like deriving inferences very similar to the way in which the human brain works. So you can call these things like models and artifacts, which essentially contain like a lot of like probabilistic rules, which kind of like run on, and an organization typically like which was only storing 5% of the rule-driven data can now actually afford to pass through this remaining 95% of the data through these GPU servers running state-of-the-art open-source software models or the AI models, and kind of like start storing the knowledge derived from the passage of this data through these foundational models to kind of like get fine-tuned to deliver like inferences which are particular to one particular organization or one particular system in a way that it is more probabilistic, not rule-driven, so which is like slightly more human-driven. And essentially what we are saying is that like data itself is generating the rules for these AI systems. Now, what's the opportunity for India? Like we are talking about like something really sophisticated. We are something talking about leapfrog technologies. Now, India didn't have the wired broadband. Like we leapfrogged into the 4G and the 5G world. And what that has resulted is that like as we are 20% of world's population, we generate 20% of world's data. Now, the opportunity in compute lies in the fact that like India only has 2% of the world's compute capacity in terms of the amount of power which is consumed by our compute and the amount of compute systems we have running in our data centers. So which means that like about 10x the amount of compute still needs to be kind of like designed and delivered for Indian organization, which has the capability to process like almost like 10x more data than we are currently processing. So if we are processing only like, so out of the 20% of world's data, like if we only have 2% of world's compute, so there is a gap between the amount of data we have and the amount of compute we require to process it. So which kind of like presents like the opportunity to leapfrog into directly into the GPU sector, which requires a very different set of capabilities compared to what the CPU-centric world required. So this is the biggest opportunity that like we are trying to pursue in terms of like kind of like helping India leapfrog from GPU world to the CPU world. Now, so what has happened? Like, so the whole world has obviously realized this. Like, there are obviously developed countries which move far ahead in advance of what happens in India. And the broad trend we have seen in terms of shift in the computing has been that, like, earlier, the cost of compute compared to the revenue of an organization typically was low enough that people wanted software capable of doing everything from everything, without worrying about the cost. So there was a broad trend of all the compute getting concentrated with very large hyperscalers. So who charged a lot for their compute because they were delivering the software capabilities of being able to service every single geography, every single workload from $5 to $500 million per month. And the R&D cost of like doing every single workload in the world for every single industry, every single organization, required like a lot of customization, and most people ended up paying for the compute on hyperscalers, which was about 3 or 4x times of if they did the compute on their own, and there was no space in the middle basically. So now what has happened is that like with GPU compute increasing the percentage terms of expense for any organization in terms of the amount of compute they use to deliver the software stack within an organization, that number is now drastically going up, which means that there is suddenly a space for like specialized cloud providers who are not as expensive as hyperscalers, but in terms of capabilities, they provide like almost a similar functionality, maybe doing 10% of the features, but delivering 90% of what is needed by most organizations. So we are one such organization in India, and some of the organizations in the US have now shown that like it is possible to build like very large scale multi-billion dollar businesses in competition with the hyperscalers if you deliver like certain set of services in a fashion which is very similar to them and kind of like adds value in terms of like not having to do 80 or 100 or 200 different activities that a typical IT department of a very large organization used to do, like kind of like there is new space in the middle for specifically for cloud GPU providers in every geography where people understand that, okay, like what needs to be built, which is very similar to what the hyperscalers have built, but at like half the price or lower. And since like there is a massive amount of like money going into the GPU compute compared to what was going into the CPU compute, where like I think like you were talking about like cloud as a couple of $100 billion worth of business. Now we are already talking about like GPU cloud as like something like adding like so to the overall business of the cloud. So which means that this has to come from the pockets of enterprises and organizations. Now the advantage of like having specific cloud GPU kind of compute players is that like they can deliver this cost advantage very similar to the way they were delivering in the CPU world. Now, what was not proven in the market was that in the CPU world, like we didn't see like very huge examples of like very large businesses built in a short span of time. Now, in the cloud GPU world, in the US and in many other countries, we are already seeing like specialized cloud GPU providers growing very big, very fast on the back of this new demand coming in for GPU-driven computing. So that is the category in which your company operates. And now I would like to hand over our call to our CFO, Megha, who will briefly touch upon the financial and operational heights of the quarter under review. Over to you, Megha.
Thank you, Tarun, and good morning, everyone. Let me first start by giving you some of the key financial highlights. I will summarize the performance for Q1 FY25. For Q1 FY25, the revenue from operations stood at around $417 million, which witnessed a substantial growth of 112% on year-on-year basis. EBITDA for the quarter is $274 million, which further provides a growth of around 168% on year-on-year basis. EBITDA margin for the quarter is 66.34%, which demonstrates a growth of 1403 bits year-on-year. PAT is reported at $101 million, which demonstrate growth of 44% year-on-year basis. PAT margin for June quarter is 24.46% and diluted EPS is 6.75 for the quarter, which is around 41.8 or 42% year-on-year increase. If we do a quick comparison from last quarter, that is March, we have witnessed revenue growth of around 40% on quarter-on-quarter basis from $296 million to $417 million in the current quarter. EBITDA for the quarter is $274 million, which shows a growth of 79% on quarter-on-quarter basis, and we have reported a net profit of $101 million. That concludes the update for the quarter, and we can now open the floor for question and answer session.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Pratik Singh from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Congrats on a great set of numbers.
Thank you.
Yeah. So am I audible, right? Hello, am I audible?
Yes, please go ahead.
Sure. So the first question is largely on unit economics from a rental perspective. So I understand that you'll be paying rentals to your co-location partners. So do we pay rentals on a per rack basis or on a per kilowatt or megawatt basis? And ballpark, how much would it be?
See, the individual figures are broadly confidential and covered under NDAs, typically.
Sure.
Like long-term contract. But roughly, like when we put everything together, then broadly, kind of like that comes down to about like incrementally for new high-density workloads, it comes down to about like say 10% or so of our front-end revenue on a unit basis.
Understood, sir. And the second question, sir, as you rightly mentioned, that the GPU-based compute servers consume way more power and the power density for those racks needs to be much higher. From what I understand is that the typical CPU-based racks generally are like 10 kilowatt per rack max and GPU-based are 50-60 kilowatts per rack. So are our co-location partners, do they have this kind of an arrangement where you can fully fit your 8x800 GPU servers on one rack, or it's only a traditional arrangement where on one rack, you know, instead of filling it completely, you're just filling one 8x800 server which takes around 10 kilowatts. So the question that I'm asking is because we didn't have a lot of AI-based centers in India, right? So how is it working right now? Are we not completely filling the racks because then that will need a lot of cooling and all? So how is it working right now?
So, like, I didn't understand the question, but, like, I'll try to answer it as best as I can. See, most of the data center facilities, like, including, like, any facility which was planned to be built even, like, say, 4 years back, would not be built for, like, very...
Yeah.
Anyway, was not very useful in very warm climate of India. So it used to make a lot of sense to do like densities of no higher than about 14 to 15 kilowatts per rack. Now, does that mean like there is misutilization of space? I probably wouldn't characterize it in that way because like you're not just running GPU servers, you're also running CPU servers, you're also running switching fabric, you're also running storage, you're running a lot of equipment. So overall, like any data center has to be designed with generic workloads in mind. Now, is it still able to run the GPU servers? The answer is yes. Like most of the data centers today at least have like ability to run like the GPU servers without like any overall significant difference in the cost compared to a very high density data center.
Understood, sir. And the cooling requirements and all, the cooling facilities don't need to be changed. They are as it is, as they were earlier.
Not for another one or two generations.
Sure. And
I think like high density compute like that of the kind we are looking at, like is still about like a year and a half to 2 years away.
Great, understood. And so my last question is largely on H200, which is now being launched. Would we be moving to them, or we think that H100 for now is enough sufficient for most workloads that we are seeing right now?
Okay, so like you have to match the workloads with the price per unit of teraflop. So like in that sense, that typically like H100 would be slightly more expensive than H100. Now, depending on the workloads, if you do not have like typically more memory requirements, you will continue to be able to use like H100 even for new workloads without having to spend extra for the extra amount of GPU memory.
Thanks a lot. I have a few more questions, but I'll join back with you. Thank you, sir, and all the best.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prathamesh Tiwar from Tiger Assets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, firstly, sir, congrats for the good set of numbers. So I have three questions. Firstly, on the CapEx side, so I think we have announced around 800 crores of CapEx for FY25.
No, we didn't actually, that is not true. Like, we didn't announce 800 crores of CapEx. Okay. Somebody asked, like, how much would you like to spend? So okay. My answer was that, like, in an ideal world, if we had the money, we would like to spend that much. So So there was no announcement from our side as such that like we will do 800 crores of EPS. It might end up that like we end up doing that much, but like let's not call it an announcement. So anyway, so that's the first question, I guess.
Yeah, so sir, let's say you're going to do, but some amount of capex is expected, right? So for this year. So just wanted to know how it's going to be funded.
See, broadly, it's going to be a mix of like vendor financing, debt, and internal accruals, and potentially some amount of equity raise.
Okay. So, sir, any figure you'd like to give on the capex side for FY25, looking at the economic scenario?
Sorry, I didn't understand.
Like you said, 800 crores capex is not fixed as of now. So, any figure you'd like
to give? It could be more, it could be less. Like, I mean, like, so we are very, very flexible. So this is no longer the environment where you had to wait for hardware for like 6 months. So you had to like really plan ahead. We used to do a lot of just-in-time in the past. And the planning cycle for us, like we can drastically shorten it to like about 6 to 8 weeks as opposed to having like a 6 month or 12 month kind of planning cycle now.
Okay. And so second question is on the MRR side. So I think you have told like you will do MRR of around 14 to 16 crores for FY25, if I'm not wrong. So if we see in Q1, I think we have done MRR of around 13.5 crore. So how are we looking at coming quarters? Will coming quarters be more like towards 15, 16? Or what's the number you'd like to give?
I wouldn't like to give any number. Like, we are never in a habit of giving any guidance for next quarter or next to next quarter. Like, so we are talking about like next 3 quarters. So we'll simply have to wait and see.
Okay. Okay.
Also, I would like to correct you that like the MRR for June is not 13.5. The MRR for June is about 14.5.
Okay. Okay, sir. I think that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pratik Chaudhary from Samarthya Capital. Please go ahead.
Sir, am I audible?
Yes, Pratik. Can you speak a bit louder?
Yeah. Is it better now?
Slightly better.
So for the as you said that June MRR is roughly 14.5 crores. Does that largely mean full utilization of the 450 AI H100 units that you have?
I would say about like say about 90-95% utilization
for that MRR.
So we still have like additional inventory available. So to the extent that like this is about at about 90-95% of the utilization.
In your rough assessment, how much? What is the kind in terms of number of H100s or similar such devices required? What would be the India requirement? Coming along in the next 1 or 2 years?
See, these are all wild guesses ultimately, because like in the sense that like when you start seeing the industry reports, by that time like all estimates like are based on the actual numbers. So like India in a way follows the developed market. So we are very, very hopeful that like what we are seeing in the developed markets, like India will also see that. Like, and especially true because the gap in India in terms of processing capability is far higher. Like, I think like you can't predict like what will happen like in a quarter or what will happen in 2 years, but like we are very, very hopeful of a very bright future for cloud GPU industry in India based on the fact that what we are seeing in the developed markets today.
And are we also in a position to target international markets in a significant way? And is that already happening for the current GPU?
Yes, yes, yes. That is already happening. So in the sense that, like, essentially, this is a business of solving problems. So we are already seeing some level of traction outside India as well.
What percentage of your AI GPUs would be deployed for overseas customers?
So it would be premature to comment based on, say, one quarter or so. But, if we could predict it, it would be, over a year, I think would be somewhere between, say, 25% to 30%.
Wow, that's a great number. And what's the pricing difference as of now? Vis-a-vis your international competitors for the same GPU, AI?
So Indian customers and international customers pay the same.
No, for your the price that the competitors offer, your international competitors, what is our the roughly percentage?
There is never a 1:1 price comparison because there is always tremendous difference between features of one provider versus the other. So there would always be providers who charge almost 5x of what we charge. There would always be providers who charge maybe even 25-30% less than what we charge. So we are never the lowest priced compute provider out there, because we have a whole set of features that we have built and capabilities that we have built. Also, the pricing depends in a lot on a lot of things in the way in which a customer typically consumes the compute resources. So it's not it's never an apples to apples comparison when you say that one GPU versus one GPU, what are you paying at provider X versus provider Y?
Just last two questions. There was an announcement that B100 would be coming in some time. And the difference in terms of compute, which I read, was it's almost 2.5 times better with only 25% increase in cost.
See, when you talk about software, these are very, very absolute numbers. So, the difference could be 25x for modern software built with modern techniques of that era in the future. The difference could be as low as 1.3x for all you know and care. So, you can't place a theoretical number and say that, this is the projected theoretical number. So, based on this theoretical number, this is what number the compute has advanced. So, a lot depends on, the software stack which is being run. And the ability of the customer to derive the benefits also depends on how much they are willing to invest into re-architecting their software to make use of the new hardware that gets delivered in the future. So it's never cut and dry that way.
So basically my question is from...
Sorry to interrupt you, sir. I request you to come back for a follow-up question. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address the questions from all the participants, please limit your questions to 2 per participants. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kishji Saraf from Tusk Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Many congratulations on the great results. I wanted to move, just zooming out a little bit, how is the market shaping up in terms of you making the wrappers around providing the GPU and obviously the competition at the overall level, when we look at it, is increasing, yes, but at the same time, you mentioned there is no one provider and there is no vanilla solution as such. So just some color on how you're differentiating or what are the use cases that you're building as we go along.
We are very focused on natural language processing and computer vision and their equivalents in the generative AI world, which is the LLMs and diffusion-based models. And apart from that, we will continue to fill the gap in supporting newer workloads. Now, essentially the way to look at this business is not from the lens of asset monetization, but from a software platform perspective. So as long as you keep building a software platform which serves the needs of the customer, the customers will continue to use the platform. So that's the whole idea behind the business.
Okay, understood. So in this software part only, how are we trying to sort of stay ahead? I mean, is there a plan that you guys have in place, or because the situation is rapidly changing, you're just trying to make sure that you have the software updated in terms of the updated use cases, the requirements that are coming up?
Yeah, so we obviously have a very active development team which continues to release features like every couple of weeks, and every quarter, like, we make a lot of progress in terms of like what we are doing for our entire cohort of customers based on the learnings that we get from our interactions, both from industry experts, our customers, and what is the state of the art which is ongoing in the AI ML community in general.
What did I get back in the queue? Thank you so much. All the best.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next follow-up question is from the line of Pratik Chaudhary from Samarthya Capital. Please go ahead.
Were there any one-off in our quarter one results?
Sorry, I didn't get your question.
Were there any expenses that we capitalized in Q1 FY25?
I'll let Megha answer this question. It seems like a finance question.
No, there are no expenses which have been capitalized.
Okay, thanks a lot. I'll get back to you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek from ABC Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, Abhishek, please go ahead.
First of all, congratulations on the numbers. Great set. Secondly, my first question is, you had given guidance of approximately 40% revenue growth year on year for the medium term. So in this year, will you be doing any upward guidance? Will you upward it, the guidance?
We don't usually give any guidance. So broadly, what happens is that, like, that is usually the interpretation of the people asking the question. So in an ideal world, like, you don't know what is going to happen, like, in the next quarter and next to next quarter. Like, so, like, the cloud business, like, obviously is not a business of consistency at, like, very small scale. So ultimately, we'll have to always look at the past and predict the future.
Okay, thanks. Another question is, are the promoters thinking of any of selling any stock in the near future,
See, again, like, you're asking me to predict future, but broadly, like, whatever we do, we'll obviously inform the exchange and inform everyone.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Trivedi from Nepean Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Congratulations on an excellent set of results. One question I had was that the approximately ARPU quarter on quarter has gone up as much as 48%. So if you could just give us a breakdown of what you attribute that to, as well as what the client addition has looked like for the quarter.
Basically, from a customer perspective, like, we have the kind of, like, although we do not, like, really differentiate as a very small company between the customers, but, like, what we have seen is that, like, the larger customers have grown for us in terms of, like, where we have added the revenue, and this is primarily driven by the cloud GPU side of workloads for typically, like, AI ML kind of, like, workloads.
And in terms of client addition, how many more clients have you added this quarter in terms of new clients?
So we don't really, like, kind of, like, in the new cloud GPU world, like, we're basically, like, we don't really count the customer addition, but, like, the amount of workloads we have added. Because we have moved away from the era of, like, trying to collect a lot of, like, small customers.
So we are moving towards like kind of like higher ARPU customers. So like broadly in terms of your numbers, I don't think we have seen any significant addition in terms of the overall expansion of the overall number of customers that we have. But what we have seen is that the new logos on the top end of the revenue, like they have increased.
And also in terms of customer concentration and revenue, you know, what percentage of your top 10 customers would you attribute to the current revenues?
See, this is again like a dynamic number. Like in this quarter, probably the concentration would be higher than usual. So top 10 customers might have gone up by all the way compared to previous quarters to say 45-50%. On the other hand, like this is a number that should be looked at in retrospective at the end of the year rather than on a single quarter basis, because like the cloud GPU workloads are typically like bursty workloads where a single customer might come up with like a short burst of like a large amount of compute usage, and next quarter that customer might be kind of like significantly lower than this quarter.
And one final question from my end, in terms of CapEx.
I request you to come back for a follow-up question.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from Daraina Farakshit, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask about the CapEx spend for this quarter. It seems to be about 23 crores. So is it a reflection of the demand that you are seeing? As you said that you plan for around 6 to 8 weeks lead time is required. So the number seems a little lower than the last couple of quarters. So that was my question.
So again, like it's kind of like you're also looking at like the tail end of like having like done a massive expense in the Q4 of the last year. So in that sense that like we built like a lot of capacity during that era. So obviously like will not be consistent like every quarter. So it depends on like local minimas and local maximas in many ways.
And what do you think, do you have an estimate for this quarter at least, like not for the entire year, but like for this quarter?
No, we don't do like this quarter, next quarter, like those kind of estimates, we do not like give any sort of guidance on calls.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nishan Joshi, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir, Nishan here. Sir, I have two queries. First of all, are we participating in any bidding with the government? Because as we have been enrolled with the NATI.
Currently, we are not participating in any bidding with the government. So we look at like the government business in three different ways. So one is like where we want to support our MSME partners who typically kind of like generate business from the GEM portal. So on a case-by-case basis, we want to work with those MSME partners. It's only been like less than a month since we got certified by METI. So like it's very, very early to say like what sort of business we will be able to generate over there. Now the second part is where we will start evaluating like where there is a very good match between our and those kind of workloads when they come about in form of like requirements from the government, where like we have a good match in terms of size and capability. So that is something that will happen over like next, like I would say 18, 24 months. So we are looking at a medium term over there. And the third possibility is that like where our capabilities are usable in conjunction with someone else who has like other capabilities which they can combine with our capabilities, and then like we can jointly go with those kind of partners. So again, like all these three things are like far enough in the future for me to comment on them today.
Okay. So another query. If we see the financial results for this quarter, again, the profitability has improved. If we also see the operating expenses, that has also dipped by a greater margin. So, means it's an aberration or it will continue to be in the same line?
So like we said, that this is a broad trend because of the density of compute going up, where the percentage of data center cost as a new will hopefully continue to go down in the future as well.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address the questions from all the participants, please limit your questions to one per participant. I repeat, please limit your questions to one per participant. Thank you. The next follow-up question is from the line of Aditya Trivedi from Nippon Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, just in terms of CapEx, you're obviously not giving any forward guidance in terms of the amounts, but if you could just give us the mix in terms of equity and debt that you all should follow going forward in terms of your CapEx.
See, like any kind of like equity raise, it will obviously inform the exchange before we kind of like pursue that. So, and of course, like we'll continue to use a judicious mix of internal accruals, equity, debt, vendor financing, like all of them in like various ways to kind of like finance our CapEx.
That'd be in a ratio of 3:1, 4:1. What are your internally hypothesis?
Sorry to interrupt, sir. I request you to come back for a follow-up question. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pratik Chaudhary from Samarthya Capital. Please go ahead.
So for FY25, what's the bare minimum capex? Itna to hoega based on whatever assessment you have, and what is the current asset turn?
So that's again like the same question. See, broadly like asset turn wise, like somewhere between like 0.5 to 0.6, and it also depends on like what sort of like SKUs like customers choose to deploy. So like there is a lot of variation in terms of like us not being able to kind of like very accurately predict like what is the asset turn. Now in terms of like bare minimum, like we don't have like a kind of like minimum number in our mind that like okay, this should be at least like done. So it is always based on like the current demand in the pipeline, based on which we'll continue to make investments into the CapEx.
The asset turn has fallen from 0.7 to 0.5 to 0.6?
Yeah, somewhere between 0.5 to 0.6.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Richa from Equity Master. Please go ahead.
So thank you for the opportunity. I'm actually new to this industry and company. I just wanted to understand, like beyond the hyperscalers, what are the entry barriers and, you know, what would stop more players from coming into this space? Or do you think that the opportunity is big enough that, the pie is big enough for everybody to grow?
Yes, definitely the opportunity and the pie is big enough for like a lot of players to exist in the marketplace between various levels of value addition that like various players could do. And I think the main I would not say a barrier to entry, but like the main way in which like people, in which the competitors or like the players in a particular market differentiate in this particular market is through the software. Now, in our case, like we have been kind of like been writing our cloud software for like good part of the last decade. And on the cloud GPU itself, like we have been working for like last almost like 4 or 5 years. So we believe that like that gives us like the head start in terms of like understanding the customer needs and having helped like a lot of like customers with a lot of problems. Like, it gives us a leg up in terms of, like, understanding, like, okay, like, how to kind of, like, build it.
So, would it need a lot of client servicing or engaging with client or, in that sense, would it require some
product,
kind of...
This is a product business. This is a product business. So, it doesn't mean, like, a lot of client servicing. So, this is ultimately not a services business which is dependent on the number of people. But it's a product business which depends and relies on the capabilities of of an engineering team which works in tandem. So we are trying to understand from customer that, okay, what is it that they are trying to achieve? And obviously, one part is to build a solution based on the current technologies and the solutions that we have, and then continue to help the business identify all those gaps, and then fill up those gaps in terms of like build out of new features and new software and kind of like new integration.
Okay. And so my second question is that, you know...
I request you to come back for a follow-up question.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kishjit Saraf from Tusk Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So, Tarun, just to get a sense of your overall vision for E2E now, obviously we have the GPU offerings and we have the software around. So, do you plan to keep evolving the software around the increased hardware requirements that come up? Is that something, when we think of E2E 5 years, 7 years down the line, is this something which you'd be continue doing, or do you have sort of another...
product development is like a continuous process, because like the cloud world, and especially like a rapidly evolving field like AI, ML, like changes and constantly evolve. So which means that the software that we do will have to constantly evolve. So that is something that is not going to change. And then like obviously to kind of like solve like adjacency of the problems that we are solving today, like we kind of like continue to build more features. So for example, if let's say there are X number of customers in a market and today our software is able to service like say Y percentage of those, obviously, you keep pushing the envelope from Y to X, and also to figure out like in adjacent countries or adjacent geographies or any other adjacency, that whether how you can easily expand into another market by building new software. So like we are big believers in that, and like we will continue to do that.
Okay, and in terms of vertical specific software, are you planning to go deeper in on specific verticals? How is the plan there?
So obviously there are about like 40-50 different paths. Like so, the number of workloads that can be using AI, ML in different ways, and the foundational technologies needed for those is like a very large set of software. So we'll continue to kind of like evolve our software game into all those areas.
Okay, understood. Thank you so much again.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hardik Satya, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations, Tarun, on the stellar set of numbers.
Yeah, thanks for
So my question is related to the capex that we did last year of 185 crores approximately. What is the status of deployment? Have we done the deployment completely up to April, or was it done up to March or up to May so that we can get some MRR clarity?
See, broadly, the entire deployment was done by, I think, like somewhere around end of March or maybe first week of April. So almost all of that is done. Deployment means that like it is available on our cloud for the customers to be able to use.
Correct.
And so, in terms of MRR conversion, like the overall inventory that we acquired, including this, as of today, like from that inventory, we have utilized about like say, including all the other inventory, like we utilized like overall like about like 90% plus of the inventory.
Yeah. So given 90% utilization, and in the near future, do you see?
We have also mentioned in our presentation that like we are already in the process of acquiring another 256 H100, which would go live in this quarter.
Okay. So given the forecast for the near term, if money or funding was not a problem or a challenge, what would ideally be the demand that you are foreseeing? So would it be to the quantum of 800,000 or maybe 2,000 crore also?
So that results in like people misquoting me as like a formal announcement that okay, this is what these guys
are. I would not take it as an announcement.
I'll not take that bait this time, and I will say that like let's wait and watch. we'll keep everyone informed of our plans as they get formalized, and we'll.
But I can take that much that you are seeing a good future ahead, and there is a significant demand is what I can take from your reply.
Yeah. So over like a medium term, long term, over like next decade, like, I think like GPU driven computing is the new in thing, which is like very transformational for entire industries and potentially for seeing new industries that we have not even seen till now. So we are very gung-ho on AI, ML and GPU-driven computing world.
Yeah, and also on the fact that government is pushing for having the data centers in India and keeping the data within the boundaries of India. What kind of opportunity do you see in those segment?
I think like that's an evolving trend. So like that helps us, but it's not like quantifiable. See to what extent that helps us. So, but we do see like some effects of that, like where like we are now seeing a trend of like more and more Indian companies recognizing the need to work with Indian vendors. So whether it becomes like a huge snowball, we don't know as of yet, but we are seeing green shoots of that behavior, that as an Indian company, we are more comfortable dealing with an Indian company rather than like companies from outside India.
So can we attribute meaty empanelment to
that? Sorry to interrupt you, sir. I requested to come back for follow-up questions. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aman, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello. Am I audible, sir?
Yes, I am audible.
Sir, my question is, what is our USP over the, if we are in a competition with the largest player or a emerging domestic player, somewhere what we see the competition that makes us different from the competitor, which is an infrastructure heavy player, and what add-ons we provide in terms of cloud services to our clients?
So there is a long list of cloud services that we have been providing from last many years. And typically what happens with software usage is that software is a habit. So whether it's a larger player with like a bigger piece of software, whether it is like a player which is more infra-heavy, less software, like ultimately the differentiator would become the stickiness of the software that we eventually produce. With the help of like understanding from our customers, that we build from our customers. So ultimately the differentiator is going to be the software platform that we are building.
So are you trying to convince me that we are a, or
I'm
we
not
are
trying to convince you of anything?
No. Are we at better stage?
I only want to convince our customers to use our product. Like I don't need to convince anyone else.
No. I just wanted to tell that, what I am understanding that we are at a better stage in cloud service and software from the what you are telling.
We initially launched our very first versions of the software way back in almost 8 to 10 years back. So obviously our software has seen like thousands of customers running their production on that. And of course, we have faced like a lot of issues and feature requests which we have solved for. So that gives our software like definitely a lot more maturity than many of our competitors.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gurubakh Singh, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. My question is, sir, I think you mentioned to one of the previous queries that, you know, we've been moving steadily towards the larger customer profile, right? And as we do that, do you think that we would be taking on the bigger players in the competitor set, and would that impact our margins going forward?
Enterprise software and enterprise cloud is a very solution-driven market. So as you solve deeper problems, your margins ideally like get somewhat impacted by the amount of solutioning you do initially, but eventually it results in much higher ARPUs and much higher margins, because the amount of stickiness that you produce in terms of lifetime value of the customer continues to increase.
Okay. So are we saying that as we improve on our solution-based approach, there is a possibility to even get higher margins? Is that even possible?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Thank you, sir. That's all.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pankaj Kumar, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations on a good set of numbers. So only one question I have. So the margins have really improved, the EBITDA margin. Is it something that is sustainable in future quarters or in upcoming years?
Ours is a platform business. The overall team size, the platform size doesn't need to really increase with the amount of cloud business that we do. So we can potentially scale up the business 10x, where the platform remains practically the same in terms of the size of the dev team and the size of the operations team. It needs to grow very organically compared to whatever the growth on the side of the front-end revenue. So that way, there is always any platform business, the scope for growth of margins is always there.
Okay. So similar margins can sustain in the future quarters also for FY25. Is that understanding correct?
So, I don't say quarter by quarter. I would say medium term and long term, the broad trend should sustain.
Okay. So can we say that we have moved from 50 plus percent kind of margins to 60 plus percent kind of margins? Is that a reasonable estimate or reasonable understanding?
I already answered this question, right? Like in the medium term and the long term, I think this trend should sustain.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. We'll take this as the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Yeah, thank you everyone. I always continue to learn from all the questions that we get from our esteemed investors. Thank you all of you. Thank you to the Valorem team. Thank you Megha and everyone for joining us today. Let's hope to continue our conversations over the future calls. Thank you everyone.
Thank you. On behalf of E2E Networks Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.